and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to the Tuesday edition of the French Connection. Today's date is the 25th day of November, 2008. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Great to have you here with me for this most important of broadcasts. Again, ladies and gentlemen, we are bringing the facts to you as they exist in our research and as we have discovered through countless interviews and books and articles and connecting the dots. Ladies and gentlemen, we are probably the most forward-thinking group, or I'm one of the most forward-thinking people on the planet to push these facts forward. Clearly, I was not the first, and I must give my homage or my deference to the people who came before me to put these facts together in advance of my work. But clearly, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm going to bring this broach this subject with my guest tonight, Mohammed Rafiq. 4 years ago, when I started saying these things on air, I was roundly savagely at times attacked by people from every part of the alternative press. Now, alternative press is a new phenomenon over the last 6-7 years, ladies and gentlemen. We have not really had a voice as a group. Human beings have not had a voice. Who has had the voice are the people who own the press, and that, as you will discover from listening to the French Connection and reading our site, has been the Zionist Jewish crime gang who has controlled the flow of information. But over the last 4 years, that has shifted, and it is shifting quickly now. We are gaining traction worldwide in 150-plus countries because we're talking the truth, and people actually go and check on this stuff afterwards, and they find out that Smith is saying what is actually the facts on the ground, and that he can prove it. I can prove it. And people are angry enough at seeing what they're seeing in their financial world and in their shrinking of their spending power and fear over losing their homes and jobs. They're starting to look into the facts and find out I am spot on. And it's being transferred now into the investigation of this man Obama, his full team. I have been bringing you information for the last several weeks about his crime gang that is just supplanting the previous crime gang, but from the same group, from Kissinger and Associates on up to the Rothschilds, to the Brothmans, to the Crowns, to the Spielbergs, to the Levins, to the Oppenheimer group in South Africa, to the big kingpins of business who are, you know, when Ralph Nader, that sack of lie, goo, Mr. Nader, last week, I have to say, after reflection, deep reflection on Mr. Nader, he is a coward. Either a coward or a criminal himself. Yeah, I hope somebody ships this to his office so that they can hear this rebuttal on his cowardice in face of an ability to know the facts. This man has been an insider for a long time. He had all the chances in the world to voice his opinion on the facts. Everyone. And he did the Irish jig around those facts, ladies and gentlemen. He was scared, scared, scared. The man was scared. He was running scared. He's, oh boy, I gotta get off the air right now. Oh boy, oh boy. Now, I gave him a pass, an excuse. Why? I don't know why. I mean, at the time, you know, when you're doing these interviews, you don't have a script. This isn't scripted stuff. And while he talked about APEC in its peripheral influence, he had a chance to go after the heart of the crime gang and say, yes, world enterprise, world business, world capitalism is not, in fact, a capitalist system. It is a stacked deck in favor of Zionist criminality. He had that opportunity. I handed it to him. I handed it to him in the first question. I handed it to him in my second and third and final questions. And in each and every instance, he tiptoed around it and finally ended up running for cover. Shame, shame, shame on you. Send him this audio file in his inbox and tell him Daryl Bradford Smith holds you responsible for obfuscating. Shame on you, Ralph Nader. And I wonder sometime if he's just not a third-party foil for the crime gang. Starting to look that way to me. Starting to look that way to me. That he helped maybe George Bush in the first election get his election consummated and got him shooed into the job because that's who they selected. And, of course, he's talking Obama and corporatism and blah, 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 when, in fact, he knows that Zionist criminality is behind our world's problems. We're going to talk with my guest today in just a second here, Mohammed Rafiq. But, you know, each time Mohammed comes on, we've talked technical things, and I urge the new listeners or people who are new to the French Connection, especially from the Pan-African audience and the Middle East audience and the Pakistani audience, which are all growing exponentially thanks to the hard work of CII's staff and CII's worldwide satellite broadcasting abilities. We're getting traction worldwide here. You need to go back and listen to Mohammed and myself speak on the roots of this problem going back as far as a year and 2 months. 14 months ago, we were bringing these facts to you. I mean, how it happened, why it happened, when it happened, and what was coming. And we've been accurate, and we're going to do it again tonight. Mohammed Rafiq, are you with me, my...
I am indeed. Good evening, Daryl, and salam alaikum to the listeners.
Well, Mohammed, you know, we've been looking at this stuff, you and I, we've been talking privately, we've been trying to suss this stuff out and get an actual take on it all. You know, let's go first into the little history of this opening up, this truth opening up around the world. You remember when you first heard of me. I mean, this was 4 years ago now when you first caught wind of the things I was saying and how this thing took off. People were saying that I was crazy on air. They thought I was a whack, and they fired me from job after job for telling these facts, didn't they?
They did indeed, Daryl. It was a very interesting start. I'd actually been listening to some of your earlier shows on the French Connection before we'd ever spoken, and I was impressed by the subject matter and the sincerity that you were covering it. And I actually made a contact with you, if you remember.
Yeah.
Saying, you know, don't feel down about this stuff. It's a lot bigger than it looks, etc. And we started speaking offline, off radio, as it were. And I started putting some of these bits of the Zionist conspiracy to you, and you went through a very unique process of discussing your research and the books you were reading and the articles you were reading and the tapes that you were listening to and the other media that you were looking at, and taking your listenership through that process with you. And, of course, when you then started coming out, and some of that you did offline, when you then came back on air and said, I've been looking into this stuff and these Zionists are behind all sorts of things, it was the most amazing phenomenon, because as you're aware, Daryl, I've been looking into these for the best part of two decades, these issues, and it had been very much a minority sport before you got involved in the French Connection. But the kind of clout that you had among the various agencies that were trying to control what you were doing meant that you managed to force them to take up the material that you were presenting so that they did not appear to be what they really are. It was a very strange chess game, really.
Yeah.
But it's resulted in a spread across the internet of people who are aware of this subject in the last year or so, which, in my studies of this, it's unprecedented. I've never seen anything like it, Daryl. And really, the big opening of this occurred through that French Connection movement with all the various agencies trying to surround and keep you ring-fenced and also not look like they were disingenuous or professionals or whatever it is they happen to be. And in doing that and trying to keep in line with you, they actually spread your message. But
it was either that or get exposed. You know, Mohammed, when I was bringing up some of these subjects, the people that were saying that, you know, Smith doesn't have it right, and then all of a sudden a couple of tidbits would come out that proved me right, which that has happened hundreds, thousands of times, but when it would come out, they were afraid to look wrong. They were afraid to look like liars and lose their credibility, which ultimately happened for many of them. And what we face today is even people like Alex Jones, who has been denying this stuff from the beginning, saying it's the German death cult and it's the Vatican banks and it's the P2 Lodge. It's all this nonsense. And in fact, he's been caught in his lies and has to now. We just put it on the site tonight. We're going to put it up. He's actually starting to now admit that Zionism is behind it as well, because he has to.
He looks far too out of step with the understanding that everybody else has managed to come to. They've looked at the evidence as presented by you, as you've rightly said, maybe work that was done even decades ago by other people, but that was pretty much lost, but that you brought it all front and centre, that the various agencies trying to ring-fence you had to join in to make it look like they were fighting the same fight, because you had a very good reputation. This is for a lot of the listeners out there in CII. Darryl had a very high reputation in the so-called truth movement for being actually truthful. And this was one of the things which was your greatest strength, really, Darryl, was your reputation for being somebody who, you know, may be prepared to take people head on and call a spade, but nobody would deny that you were honest in what you were saying. And
yeah,
this was the double whammy to them. The double-edged sword you had was that everybody knew you were telling the truth, and if you said you'd researched something and it stacked up, then people really were taking that as a strong reference. And that added extra pressure onto these fake sites and disingenuous people. But it added even greater pressure for them to march in line.
Yeah. Well, you know, not what we're looking at, though, Muhammad. You know, I got undermined, too. I mean, I was infiltrated. I had a partner I was working with that was undermining me left, right, and center. And, I mean, there was a period when I was taking a very powerful medication for not feeling well, and I was very sick. And now, instead of this guy, he used that as an opportunity to destroy me and went out into the world and tried to undermine me from within my organization that I had built. And almost succeeded. He almost succeeded. And I got to tell you, at the time, you when you're a target of professional intelligence services, boy, oh boy, they're not bad at their job in some cases. They know their work. And I got hit by this guy broadside. I really did. And I tell you something, it is since I've recovered from his lies that this has really taken off, because his undermining has ceased. And even though he's continued to try to destroy my reputation on his website, I have been able to rise above his attacks and actually gain credibility. And in fact, now that he attacks me, it's a benefit to me, because everybody knows he's a bad guy, so when he does something to attack me, it actually is giving me more credibility.
Well, I think they've all realized, with it, that one single exception, that attacking you isn't a wise move, because you've got a reputation as somebody who researches diligently. Something else which you were also known for, Darryl, and still are, to that matter, is that you would look into a matter. If you found it to be true today, you would advocate it, and then on further reflection or further information, you'd be prepared to change your position,
yeah,
which showed that you weren't somebody who just stuck to dogma or was incapable of admitting an error on air. Because you did all these things, you have that reputation, and that's now culminated so many years on with this explosion across the internet now. And we've seen this amazing phenomenon that you mentioned, Darryl, which is that, you know, at the time of, I was mentioning to you earlier, Darryl, when Bush came in last time,
yeah,
nobody would have looked at the people he was choosing for his administration and would say, oh, look, he's a Zionist, this one's a Zionist, the other one's Zionist. They would maybe look at them and say, oh, he doesn't have experience of that office, or, you know, the guy in the military doesn't have military experience. They would be commenting on the experience. It's intriguing that now that Obama is close to coming into power in the States, across the net, people are looking at his appointees to his administration, and they're saying, look, Zionist, look, another Zionist, look, two more Zionists. They're amazed as they watch real time in front of their own eyes these Zionist appointments. But of course, now what they haven't realized, they are able to recognize it. 4 years ago, there was hardly anybody could have seen this.
But you remember the conversation we had about 2 years ago about the movie They Live? And we're talking about the guy putting the glasses on and looking around and going, oh my, this is, the guy says, I don't want to put those glasses on. He says, why? He says, because then I'll have to see it everywhere. Well, glasses are, everybody's putting the glasses on because the Carpenter film, They Live, they do live. They are here. The Zionists are around us. And the fact is, people such as Holbrook, who has a British-sounding name, is a Zionist Jew. Somebody like Dennis Ross, who sounds like another British-sounding name, another Zionist Jew. You know, when you take a look at some of the people in government, Muhammad, that have seemingly sounding names that come from a Celtic background or come from a British background. David Manning, a Zionist Jew. You know, you can't make this stuff up. Now, this guy Manning is running things again in Britain, coming back. He's got connections to Rothschild, but he doesn't sound Jewish either. But the fact of the matter is, once you start digging under the surface, you find out these people are in the crime gang, and they are as connected to the Zionist movement as you could possibly be.
Well, that's correct, Darrell. I mean, a large number of Jews who flocked to Britain in the early 1900s all changed their names on arrival in order, because they were white in appearance, European in appearance, Caucasian, they changed their names to try and fit in better with British society. And they looked at common British names and adopted them. It's very famous. One that I'm quite intrigued with was Kissinger. Henry Kissinger sounds very English, but I've discovered that his family name was in fact Loeb when he was born in Bavaria in Germany.
Kahn-Loeb. Is it the family Kahn-Loeb from the banking fortune?
Yep, same name. Same name. But of course, Kissinger himself was... The family adopted this name after the town of Kissing in Germany. Kissingen. And so they adopted a name to make them sound more Christian. A very, very common phenomena. And, of course, that makes... Some of them are easy to spot, like, you know, Rahm Emanuel with his Israeli passport, dual citizenship.
Yeah, but he also had a name change from a very Jewish-sounding name, changed by his father, the Irgun member. And now, of course, we have an Irgun descendant sitting at the gateway to our next Manchurian Uncle Tom president in America.
It's quite scary. I mean, as you say, Darrell, you couldn't make this stuff up. This man, his father was responsible for the murder of British soldiers in Palestine. Part of the this gang were part of the plot that blew up the King David Hotel, which was being used by the British military at the time, and his father was under a wanted notice for, of all things, terrorism. And he is the son of a terrorist, and by all accounts, he has engaged in terrorist activities himself in Palestine.
Yes, and in Iraq. Now, he's been part of his group with Zinigniew Brzezinski, another Zionist Jew, and people like Soros and all across this group. What we see is that in Iraq, they have gone into the terrorist Israeli government and found groups to go into Iraq and use them as controlled opposition against American troops and actually shoot them dead. We've got Israelis shooting Americans. We've got Israelis hiring foreign nationals to go into Iraq and act as a opposition. And we've got people desperate within the Arab nations willing to for a fee, and there are always people willing for a fee to do something, acting as opposition in Iraq. But in fact, that opposition has been formulated there by these criminals.
a false opposition indeed. And of course, as anybody who had any common sense would look at these groups and study them and understand that, you know, you do a deal today with them, but tomorrow they're plotting your overthrow with somebody else. You're only ever going to be allowed to hold power for a very short period of time if they can orchestrate it that way. So your own death is pretty much assured simply by trying to cut a deal with them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you see, you know something, Mohammed, what we're starting to see here with the Kissinger and Associates and the people that are coming into this government, and now what we know is going back all the way to 1970 when Kissinger popped onto the scene in the Nixon years, and we saw him running the Nixon White House, and when Nixon was not willing to entirely go along with certain agendas that were happening through this Zionist-controlled government that America has had for 40 years, 50 years, 60, 70, 100 years even, going back to Morgenthau and Brandeis and the rest. But Kissinger's activities have direct roots right to the very top, right to the biggest corporations and the biggest handlers and holders of world's wealth, including Oppenheimer, including Warburg money. And you've sussed out a few of those things. You want to talk a little bit about Henry Kissinger and his crime connections?
Well, the interesting thing about Kissinger, of course, is that he was an absolute nobody up until 1955, when there was a massive change in his fortunes. Up until that point, he'd been a university graduate, done a PhD, and done quite a bit in political studies. And then he got a job as a consultant, a political consultant, to a board which was part of the American National Security Council. And the Special Operations Board that he was a consultant to ended up being headed up by no other person than Mr. Nelson Rockefeller.
Yep.
And this, in 1955, is how Kissinger met Rockefeller, and in 1957 found himself being appointed a senior member of the Rockefeller Institute. And it was Rockefeller who basically opened all the doors for Kissinger and pushed him in the various directions in order to get Kissinger's claws and influence everywhere. And part of that influence was through Kissinger Associates, because of course back in the 60s and 70s now, although there were quite a lot of Zionists around, they weren't in as many positions as they are today. I mean, the position that they hold today as a percentage, as you pointed out to Mr. Nader, it is 70% of the senior positions held by less than 2% of the population.
That's right.
And if they were Mongols, people would undoubtedly be raising eyebrows.
Let's revisit that concept for a moment here. Ladies and gentlemen, if you were to ask, I mean, come on, this is a European audience as well as an American. Look, let's take it for a second. Mongolians, as I said to Nader, you know, we probably have a 1 or 2% Asian Mongolian population in the United States, but they don't hold 7 out of 10 positions of power, and if they did, what do you think would happen if that were true in Britain or France? Look at the French government. The entire top of the French government is Zionist Jewish. We've got Kushner and Copé, and we've even got the IMF now with this Strauss-Kahn guy, and we've got Jack Lang, and we've got Boileau, and all of these people in the French government are all Zionist Jews, Mohammed.
It's scary, and of course we've got them hiding in the British government, but under names like Manning.
That's right, and Mendelssohn.
Oh. That. But coming back to Kissinger, I mean, what he did with Kissinger Associates was get himself onto the board of many major institutions throughout the world, some of them quite surprising, but the agreement was that he would become a director of the company on the sole condition that his directorship is never disclosed. So he's technically, Darrell, what's known as a shadow director. But in spite of him officially not being disclosed, his appearance on the board of a couple of dozen major institutions worldwide, such as Volvo, Coca-Cola. Obviously, there's a few banks in there as well. Really, really big institutions. But what he then did was he used Kissinger Associates to bring in a lot of Gentiles, a lot of people who were non-Jewish but could be converted into his political Zionist ideals. And this is the mechanism that he used to extend his hand. So we find associate directors of Kissinger Associates, including people like the foreign minister of Japan.
Yep.
Strange people that you wouldn't expect, but of course that's how he gets his influence there. And then we discover that one of his associates is actually the chairman of Al-Majib Al-Futaim in the UAE. Al-Futaim Industries are famous in Dubai as one of the big construction companies, and they have interests all over Dubai and the United Arab Emirates. But it turns out that the chairman is actually a representative of Henry Kissinger.